It's funny you were just mentioning tumblers because look at this bad boy.
Oh, the MU tumbler.
For those who haven't seen it, it's got knives and some black and red bubbles on the top. It's a really super cool top, and then blood dripping down the side. And I'm not going to turn this over, but if you do, there's blood inside the two levels that are like, it's like a liquid lava lamp almost when you turn it over. Super cool.
I was kind of hoping you would have just spilled it on your lap. That
I was thinking, you know what? I was real careful. If you notice, I'm like,
I was like, please let it spill. Please let it spill.
But you know, it's funny now that I'm holding it and trying to do something, it's very large for a man. I think, I think this is like something you would see a girl. Like, I don't see men like carrying this? The 40-ounce Stanleys. Yeah. Like that thing. Like how many men do you see carrying that? So I feel it's a little large.
I saw some guy earlier, but I think at the bus stop, but I think he was holding his daughter's Stanley.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is big. So one. When I do to take sips to keep my voice clear for this episode, it's going to be like.
Well, we love those tumblers. And if anyone's interested in one, they can look on our Facebook for Sharon Elwood Studios. And she makes a really cool red and black glittery MU tumbler that I need to get. But if anyone else wants one, or she'll do custom ones as well. So check that out. Everybody loves tumblers.
It's true. And she's my cousin.
Yay!
What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 52 of Murder Unscripted, the most immersive true crime podcast on the air today, and I will die on that hill. I am your host, Ed Hydock, along with my bestie, Melissa Spivey.
Heyo!
Hi, Melissa. Episode 3 of our May block entitled Podcaster Killed the Radio Star, and we're covering crimes against radio and TV personalities. In week 1, you covered the murder of radio legend Stephen B. Williams. And then last week, I talked about a really super obscure case, one from my old Forensic Files days, the murder of Debbie Dykus in her Virginia garden, which is a super sad. That's a garden's like where you go to be peaceful, not to have stuff like this happen.
Yeah, that one was a bummer. But I mean, they all are. But that one was like, I was thinking about it earlier and I was like, she was in her nice garden just trying to like relax.
She was trying to plant some tomatoes. Jesus.
Oh, you can't do anything these days. Right. Well, we have one more episode today, and we are actually returning to the land down under with a case about the very, very recent murder of a beloved Australian TV personality, which, Ed, you are going to be sharing with us today.
I am.
But before we get there, can I please, 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 please finally tell everyone who our guests are next week?
I guess you're going to have to because they're next week, so I don't think we have a choice at this point.
I'm literally the worst at keeping secrets. All right. Well, for our guests next week, I've given a couple of clues. The first one was our guests are not the worst, but they are the best. And the second clue was our guests are double the fun. And so far, we have had quite a few guesses, but no one has gotten it.
Literally, somebody this morning guessed the Doublemint twins.
Basically. Like... okay. That should get like half a point. Well, our guests for next week are the true crime queens themselves, the host of the hit true crime podcast, People Are the Worst, Rachel Kassinger and Rebecca Blackstock.
That is right. And we actually just interviewed them last night. That was a super cool. You guys are going to really enjoy that one because it's a little different. It's not just all death and destruction. We talk about the podcast journey and crime in podcasting and some of the limitations and some of the challenges and hurdles and struggles and all the good stuff that comes along with what we're doing. So Rachel and Rebecca, for those who don't know, are identical twin sisters who love true crime. They hate bad people and they love a really good plot twist.
That they do. And honestly, they are quite literally laugh out loud hilarious. Like, I've been listening to their episodes and they have actually had me in tears from laughing so hard. And they are two of the kindest, funniest, and most down-to-earth, badass women that we have ever had the privilege of meeting.
Fact.
And we were extremely lucky to sit down with them and talk about life and podcasting and, of course, the true crime cases that keep us up at night.
Of course. Yeah, they were awesome. Something about them being identical twins, I feel like they have just a natural chemistry. So their podcast is very easy to listen to. It feels like you're talking to the same person, kind of.
Yeah, and I feel they're very, like, friendly. Like, I've been listening to them for a while, and I kind of felt like I was friends with them. Like, it was like you were just listening to your friends talk. They're very personable and easy to connect with.
Yeah.
So you are not going to want to miss next week's episode. But back to this week's episode, without further ado, Ed, do you want to get into today's case?
Yeah, but who says ado? That was like when you got on me for saying... someone was gussying up last week. It's up
Wait,
there.
I saw a TikTok video. Okay, now I'm geriatric.
Mm-hmm.
The damn kids and their Tic Tacs.
Enjoy your Tic Tacs, Nana.
And it was like an older man, and he said something about gussying up, and I was like, bah!
I told you. Oh, man. All right, guys. Well, today we're bringing you a very recent case, and it's so current that it's actually still working its way through the Australian court system, which I am admitting that I'm not as knowledgeable about. I know some broad strokes, but there are definitely ins and outs that are very different than the U.S. system. So we're going to tread super lightly on this because we don't like to pick cases usually that have that don't have a full story to tell you, like adjudication, a closure. But sometimes when you're looking for cases, you find one that just hits you, you know, and you can't stop thinking about it. And it just happens to be one of those today. And I will be sharing with you the senseless murder of Australian TV personality Jesse Baird and his partner Luke Davies.
Yeah, I only know like a little bit of this case, like the stuff that's really been broadcast out there. But senseless is the perfect word to describe this one.
It definitely is. And just to kind of cover our bases here legally, I mean, the details I'm sharing about this case, it's basically what's been made public. Because like we said, this is still not adjudicated technically. So the facts are going to look a little different in this. We're going to be using the word alleged a lot and allegedly.
Yes. So please, no one come at us. But I do think that if our research producer, Sue, could pull this case off, she would be on the next flight to Australia to see this trial.
Oh, through, yeah.
Because our girl is beyond invested.
Oh, my God. Right.
She is on top of it. So we will definitely do an update or put out a follow-up or something like that if any of the facts drastically change.
Absolutely. Yeah, Sue did a great job with this one. And if she somehow manages to weasel her way in a trip to Australia, I am... Pack me in your luggage, baby. So we'll absolutely follow up as needed. I know there's going to be... We'll touch on it at the end, but there is kind of a going to be a development that we're going to share with you guys when it happens. Like, we kind of know when it's going to happen, so we'll be sure to pass that along. But with the legalities out of the way, let's get started with a little Instagram investigation, an instigation, if you will.
You are quite the instigator, but go on.
So on February 18th, 2024, Jesse Baird made his last ever Instagram post. And it was about an evening that he and his partner Luke were sharing in Sydney, Australia. They were actually attending Pink's summer carnival tour. Mm-hmm. And it's just a short clip of Jesse singing and dancing along with Pink's song, I'm Never Gonna... Never Gonna Not Dance Again.
Oh my gosh, I love that clip. It looks like they're having like the best time dancing and singing in the rain. And also, I just feel like that's haunting AF. Like, I'm never gonna not dance again. That's so chilling.
Yeah, the lyrics really are poignant. Unknowingly poignant, you know? It's just such a good example of these guys living in the moment, which is how they live their life. And it's crazy because they went to this concert and didn't even post about it until later because they were so wrapped up in whatever they were doing. And the last time they were actually seen by friends was February 18th, 2024, when they were reported to be attending the opening party for the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Festival at the Beresford Hotel. So here's one portion of the timeline of the next few days that we know for sure happened.
Okay.
Monday, February 19th, 2024. So there are reports of gunshots being heard at Jesse's Paddington Terrace home at 9:50 a.m. And I didn't look this up, which is very negligent of me, but it's they called 000. I don't know if it's called like 000 in Australia, but it's essentially 911 like we do.
Oh, right.
But I don't know if they just say call 000 or if they call, say, or if they say call 000, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully it's 000. It's catchier.
It is catchier. Yeah. So, but it comes from Jesse or Luke's phone at 9:54 a.m. And I'm saying or because we have conflicting reports about which man actually dialed 000. But the dispatcher could hear a man screaming, get out, get the fuck out. But then this call disconnected. So a patrol car was sent to the area. But because the call was disconnected, there weren't any specifics given on this 000 call. So the officer just kind of drove around without seeing anything suspicious.
Oh, don't like that.
I know. So Tuesday, February 20th, 2024, Jesse was supposed to be an umpire for an AFL preseason game between Sydney and Greater Western Sydney, but he didn't show up, which was extremely unlike Jesse.
Wait, what the hell is an AFL umpire? Like, I know what an umpire is, but what is an what is the AFL?
It's the Australian Football League, and I knew you were going to have questions, but we're going to hold on them because I want to stick in this timeline before you.
Okay. All right, fine.
Yeah, so we can keep the thing straight.
Proceed.
The next 2 days are very important. So Wednesday, February 21st, some personal items, including an $8,000 watch, some credit cards, bloody clothing. They were all found in a skip bin in southern Sydney. And Melissa, before you ask, a skip bin in Australia is like an open dumpster. You go by.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask.
I just figured I'd head it off the paths. So these items being found were a big deal. And an official missing persons investigation was launched by police, and the homicide squad was quickly brought in, because you'll see why in a second.
Mm.
So when the police go to Jesse's Paddington home, they find a ton of blood. And we're not talking like a nosebleed or a cut, which is every perpetrator's excuse every time there's 12 gallons of blood somewhere. I cut myself doing a project, so I'm like...
Mm-hmm. I had a nosebleed, yeah.
Yeah. But we're talking enough blood for investigators to say... Whoever suffered this injury or this attack certainly could not have lived. So the case went from a missing persons to a homicide the second that was seen.
I can't imagine how that must feel, like, as an investigator or a first responder, just to see that amount of blood and just instinctively know, like, that much blood is definitely fatal. Like, there's so much that there's no way the person could have survived this.
Well, and imagine having to see that day in and day out as an occupation. Ugh. Like, that's the one, that's what we did miss out on talking to Shannon, which we're going to have her back on, Shannon Byers. She was a first responder who was going to talk to us about the trauma that comes with that line of work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I completely agree with you. It has to be such a kind of a somber realization at that point.
Yeah.
So Thursday, February 22nd, the police turn to the public for help and they ask anyone who has information about Jesse or Luke's whereabouts to call them. And we know how quickly internet detectives work. I mean, especially in 2024. So just a few days later, word of the investigation spreads like wildfire. And on Friday, February 23rd, Beau Lamar Condon, a police officer, turns himself in at the Bondi Police Department, where he is charged with 2 counts of murder. And even with Lamar Condon in custody, he doesn't cooperate with the police. And it takes until the 27th. For Jesse and Luke's bodies to be found on a remote property in Bungonia, New South Wales, which is about 115 miles from Sydney. So quite a bit away.
All right. I have several questions, but that seems like it moved really fast. And if this guy already turned himself in, it kind of sounds like our episode is over.
It is. Well, thanks for joining us. Right? Perverts, don't wear signs.
Please tell me there's more to this.
There is definitely more. Although it appears we know who's responsible, I haven't told you any of the details about how we got there. So obviously, there are more layers to dig into with this one.
I was going to say, this could qualify as an MU mini.
Dude, that's shorter than a mini. Jeez, oh man. That's like an MU micro.
It's so true.
But I haven't even gotten to your favorite part yet. So
the victimology.
Oh, you know.
AKA it. Talking about the victim.
And guys, when I say what I found out about Jesse and Luke, these two guys seemed like they were the type of people who would do anything for you. The second you meet them, you become their friends, literally the nicest people on earth. Mm-hmm. And as a guy, I'll admit that they hold up the global stereotype of attractive Australian men and their perfect genetics.
You a little jealous there, Ed?
I'm not jealous.
not jealous that you're not a hottie. What? Anyway, for real though, there are just some countries where almost everyone is attractive, not America. but the Aussies, they definitely win there.
So first of all, dad bods are coming back. Second of all, who doesn't appreciate a husky Polish fella who is good at like lifting stuff?
Look at, you have two bad shoulders. What can you lift?
This tumbler.
Well, good work. Good work.
Well, when I started, I'd mentioned that we don't always love doing active cases because part of the problem is it can be tough to find information on the victims because things get released. But I feel like you find out more after the case is closed and then like all the nitty gritty comes out. Yeah. And it would have been true for this case, but with the help of some public social media accounts. And also, Sue had the pleasure of connecting with some of Jesse's loved ones. And I think that has given us a really good idea of who Jesse was.
That's awesome.
So Jesse Allen Baird was born September 4th, 1997, in the northeastern suburbs of Melbourne. And Jesse was born into this amazing family. He grew up with both his parents, two sisters, a brother. And I want to be as respectful to the Baird family as possible. So I'm really only going to touch on the family members that have spoken out in public because we don't want to drag anyone out that is clearly choosing to not go public. But guys, this family is gorgeous, like all of them. I mean, perfect family. And Jesse's sister is a member of the Gold Coast Titans netball team and has an identical smile to Jesse's. Like you can tell they're siblings. They're one of those people you look at. It's like, okay, you guys are related.
Yeah.
And based on his social media posts, no matter how far Jesse had moved from home, his family was such a huge portion of his life. Like they were clearly kind of woven into his fabric of who he was as a person.
Yeah.
So Jesse graduated from La Trobe University in 2019 with a bachelor's in drama and media. And he made his first big move to Brisbane, around 850 miles from home. So that's quite a, that's like moving halfway across the country to pursue a career in television. And he found a home at Network 10 and quickly became a beloved on-air personality. He was one of the hosts of a children's program called Totally Wild, which I looked up and it actually ran for 27 seasons.
Wow.
Between 1992 and 2021. And it was essentially Australia's longest running children's show ever. It's pretty cool, huh?
That's so cool.
Yeah. But Jesse was also a host for a show called Gamify. And it was a short-lived show. I think there were like 65 episodes, but in one season. Kind of like Double Dare. You know what I mean? It's just like one season, but it's just a billion episodes. And there were three teenagers who would get picked by this like global organization. And then they would go on to do missions and win prizes. So it was pretty neat. And he was known as JB, one of the hosts, Jesse was. Aww. And he was so loved on these shows that Network 10 actually made him a red carpet presenter.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just want to pause here for a minute and play you guys the on-air tribute to Jesse from his colleagues, Sarah Harris and Hamish McDonald.
It's been a really hard week for a lot of us here at 10, right across the 10 network. Thanks, Rach. It's hard to even talk about Jesse in the past tense because Jesse, and I'm speaking on behalf of everyone here in the studio, across the newsroom and Studio 10 as well, but he was more than just a colleague. He was our friend. He was like a little brother. He was one of those kids that lit up not just the screen, but also a room. He just had this big, beautiful smile. He was so good on air as well. He 26, absolute star. He was just thought on his feet, was quick on his feet, whether it be feeding crocs or water skiing. He did it all. He was just one of those kids who had big smile, big talent, and an even bigger heart. And 2024, it was supposed to be his year. After Studio 10 wrapped up last year, which is the last time I saw him, he was kind of wondering what he's going to do. He had a brand new job that he was about to start in a few months or in a few weeks' time. Speaking of Luke Davies, he described him as the one to some of his closest friends. He was in love. And my heart just aches for not only Luke's family, but also Jesse's family, his mum, his sister, his brother, his grandmother, who was very close with. And you need to know to Jesse's family that he spoke about you often and with so much love. And we're just all so, so sorry.
Mm-hmm. I think it's true to say that from everyone here at Network 10, There is so much love and thoughts and respect to both both families that are involved here. Yeah. A very deep sense of loss in the newsroom. I know, particularly in everyone involved in Studio 10. So I think we would all like to send and share to you our love at this most difficult time. There's so much to say, but the words are so difficult to find. And these guys should have been having the time of their lives. In Sydney's gay community, you know, this house is just around the corner from where I live. I went past it today on the way to work. The gay community is tight-knit. It's full of love and joy. And this is gay Christmas, you know, Mardi Gras. And these guys should have been having the time of their lives. It will be a very different Mardi Gras, I think, this year. And at this particular moment when the New South Wales police are trying to show that the relationship is different, the dark and difficult history has changed. Of course, we will watch to make sure that justice is delivered fairly, robustly and smoothly.
Oh, that was like beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And one more little clip here, not to, to break up the storytelling, but one more clip. This is a little look at Jesse in action.
Well, 11,000 festival goers have made the pilgrimage from right around Australia to be here in Birdsville for the 2022 Big Red Bash. And as far as lineups go, it doesn't get much bigger than this. John Stevens, Missy Higgins, Casey Chambers, and of course, the one and only Jimmy Barnes. And the best news, we have a backstage pass.
He's so natural. Like, you can just see how much people connected to him. It was like he was born to be on TV. He had such a personality.
Oh, my God. I wish I had a tenth of his just charisma and confidence. He was just a complete natural. And one of those guys that you watch it and it just puts a smile on your face. And TV wasn't the only place in Jesse's life that he was finding success. And this man clearly understood the assignment for living life because he was also, as we talked about, an award-winning goal umpire for Australian rules football.
All right. I don't even know about American sports, so you're going to have to fill me in on their Australian.
This sport. One confounded me a bit. Like I've seen rugby, and I know they call soccer football in England, but apparently Australian rules football is a combination of like rugby, soccer, football, and it's called footy. They call it football footy. And when I looked it up, it's played on an oval field, which is usually like a modified cricket field. And there are 18 guys on each side, and there's like no gear. They wear these little helmets, but that's about it. And it's a full on contact sport, like a brutal picture football without pads. And you have to score points. That's all I could figure out. So apologies to our listeners down under for stupid American retelling of the Australian football rules. But the impressive thing is that Jesse became an Australian rules football goal umpire in 2011 when he was only 14 years old.
Oh, my God.
So he was clearly making his mark as an umpire for these games. And ultimately, he ended up being an umpire for 62 games and two finals games in 2020 and 2021, which being an ump for a finals is a big deal. And he also won the Brian Pratt Medallion for most promising AFL umpire and a few additional recognitions and acknowledgments along the way. So the kid was doing things from a young age. Outside of two promising careers, Jesse obviously had passion for music, for travel, for adventure, for friends, family, fun, love, like all of it. And in trying to get to know more about Jesse, our researcher Sue reached out to a very special person in Jesse's life, Corey Dean. And he was kind enough to tell us some more about Jesse as a person. And Corey Dean shared with us about Jesse's love of travel and adventure. And he told us that Jesse had started taking acting lessons to be able to kind of expand his repertoire and his opportunities in the entertainment world. And Jesse's long-term dream life was to be able to return to Queensland and buy a home on the Gold Coast, as that's where he wanted to settle permanently. So the Gold Coast can actually refer to a bunch of different places, but it's most widely known and widely used, I guess, is to describe the area along the southeastern coastline of Queensland.
Oh, okay.
So Jesse had dreams of building an investment property portfolio and often spoke about opening his own cafe and restaurant. And another major goal he had was to buy a caravan and travel the continent. And wow. Sue told me she asked Corey Dean if Jesse had a favorite place or maybe a place that he wanted to go or see. And he shared that Jesse absolutely loved the ocean. And his go-to spot was Lifeguard Tower 29 on Broad Beach, which is at 5765 Broad Beach Boulevard. And Corey Dean also shared that any chance Jesse got to be in the water, he would go well past the break points and swim like way past where he was supposed to be. And they would always joke that he would say, Jesse, like, stop swimming with the whales and come swim with me. Like, that's how far out he was. So the two always shared a good laugh about that.
That's so cute. I've seen clips of the show Bondi Rescue. Like, I've seen it pop up in my feed, and Australian beaches are no joke. Like, not only are they beautiful, especially compared to the Jersey Shore, but you have to know, like, what you're doing to be in water like that. Like, you have to be a strong swimmer.
Absolutely, you do. And I feel like everyone down there is. Like, the people that go out there to surf, they're, like, some of the best,
mm-hmm.
and they know exactly what they're doing. So I want to shift a little bit and talk to you a little bit about Jesse's partner, Luke Davies. And I will admit, I don't have as much background information on Luke because until his disappearance and death, Luke didn't live in the public eye like Jesse did. So it's a little tougher to dig up some information, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean he wasn't equally loved by friends and family. It just means there's not as many publicly available resources for us to get that information. So I will be sharing some interesting things we found via Luke's Instagram page, along with some published statements and comments from his friends.
I mean, I don't use social media a ton, but that's because I'm lazy. But maybe I should post more in case anything ever happens to me, because it is honestly pretty cool, like, how much we were able and Sue was able to find just from these posts.
That's a fact. And you may not use socials a lot, but you are on a podcast. So there's that.
I am.
But I agree. When it comes to Jesse and Luke, it feels more like they both use Instagram like a kind of a photo journal rather to like document some major events and look back on things rather than, I don't know, brag, I guess.
Yeah, I agree.
And they definitely, they had some amazing adventures in their far too short lives. And I'll come back to how social media might have played a part in their case. So even though I don't have a ton of background information to share, Luke Davies was 29 years old at the time of his murder, and he was excited about spending his upcoming 30th birthday in Bali. And wow. After his death, his family hosted a memorial service in a park in Brisbane where hundreds of people gathered to remember the amazing man that was Luke. And there are some beautiful photos from the memorial service with almost everyone attending just wearing white. So it was very ominous. You know, it had a different vibe to it, where you hear usually just all black. It was strange to see all white. But Luke's brother John spoke and said, "I will go on forever, trying forever to be like you. You were taken from us far too soon." And one of Luke's friends, Dean Bailey, was quoted saying, "Lukey, my friend, if the word unforgettable was a person, it would be you."
It's such a nice thing to say about someone.
It really is. And one of Luke's, there was no shortage of people who had nice things to say. But one of Luke's former school teachers spoke out and said, quote, "He brought pure goodness, light, and had a cheeky, fun-loving demeanor."
Oh my God. Those are some of like the kindest things that could ever be said about someone. And I really hope that you don't expect that kind of love at your funeral, because I'll be up there being like, meh, he was all right. His face was kind of dumb, but otherwise wow. He was all right.
What if I had an accent? What if I had an Australian accent?
That would help. Yeah.
That would help. That's nice.
That would help.
Well, anyway, Luke was also known for his immense love of travel, just like Jesse was. And he was a flight attendant and had recently landed what I now know to be a coveted position with the Australian airline Qantas on their international flights. And don't quote me on this, but I believe that's actually how Luke and Jesse ended up in the same area and were able to meet. But I wasn't able to find an exact timeline on their relationship, only that the two had recently found each other and they were just both really happy spending time together. It was simple, simple fun.
Yeah.
So like I said, Luke was an avid traveler, and if you go to his Instagram page, I'm going to list out for you some of the places that he had been. And this is insane to me because I'm 45 years old and my list is like there's not this many places in the U.S., let alone
the world.
So here we go. New Zealand, the Netherlands, Germany, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Croatia, France, the U.K., Samoa, Singapore, Italy, Portugal, Thailand, Chile, Hong Kong, Japan, Indonesia, Canada, and the USA.
Oh my God. That actually reminds me, I need to renew my passport. Not that I'm going anywhere near as cool as he went, but that is incredible. And for being so young to have been able to see all of that and experience everything, like, these two young men were incredible.
Totally wild. I mean, I can't even imagine being that worldly at that age.
Yeah.
And being part of an international flight crew had to be literally a dream job for someone who loves to travel.
Yes.
And Luke's final Instagram post was made on February 16th, 2024, with three photos of him in Capilano Forest.
Oh, that's a beautiful picture, that first one. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I do want to share this reel that Luke made and posted on August 3rd, 2023, because I feel it really gives us a glimpse into how he viewed the world and experiencing all that each place he visited had to offer.
Generally, when I see things like this, I kind of feel like it's like an influencer, like bragging, but I don't get that from Luke and Jesse.
No,
I get that, they were just so excited about life and where they were. And I genuinely feel like they knew how lucky they were to be able to experience this and really take it all in.
Absolutely.
There's just something about the two of them that I really, really like. And they just seem like such good people.
100%. And I'm not entirely sure how long they've been together, but they had just kind of made their relationship official on Instagram on February 5th and February 7th, respectively. And The sad part is that neither of them could have known. That was just two weeks before all this happened. Now that we know more about Jesse and Luke, and we know the timeline of events as it pertained to them, so let's talk about Beau Lamar Condon and fill in the timeline as it allegedly pertains to him.
Allegedly, covering all of our bases.
Now, this is our blanket trigger warning for the overuse of the word allegedly.
Yes.
Well, this is a timeline that has been publicly announced by the police, and that's why they are alleging that Jesse was the intended target of this premeditated murder. And sadly, Luke was murdered simply because he was at Jesse's home.
There's nothing more that I hate than like the whole wrong place, wrong time thing.
I agree. And it always happens to truly innocent, good people, you know? Well, Beau Lamar Condon signed a Glock-style service weapon out from his, if you remember, he was a cop, we had mentioned.
Right.
He signed a Glock out from the Miranda Police Station on Thursday, February 15th for a user pay event. And that's when there's an event and it might need some additional security. So you can privately pay for officers to help out at the event, be on scene. Like, do you guys have things like that? Melissa, if you don't know, is a security, she works at a security firm.
Yeah, we do. We, will come in as additional security, either armed or unarmed, just in case they like need backup.
Yeah, totally. So I don't know if this was really an event or if it just was his cover saying there was an event. But either way, that's why he claims he had a service weapon in his possession.
That is a lot different than here. Like, they had to sign out weapons. Like, police officers in the States always have their service weapons here, right? Like, don't they take them home and like it's part of like their uniform?
It's true. Yeah, they can have their gun with them at all times, as far as I know. Yeah, Australian has incredibly strict gun laws, which is one of the reasons this case shook this country up, because you don't hear about this kind of stuff a lot there.
Yeah.
Like, these crimes, we have a surprising amount of listeners in Australia. And I don't know if it's maybe just a fascination with crime, because it's like, this is stuff we don't see. Even like, you figure even Americans are fascinated by this. Can you only imagine people, the shock of some of these stories to people who are like, we don't really know violence.
Yeah.
So on Saturday, February 17th, Beau was caught on camera purchasing a surfboard bag. Gigantic bag. And on Monday, February 19th is when those gunshots were heard by neighbors at Jesse's Paddington home. So a nearby security camera captured the audio of the three shots. It was like, pa, 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 like in rapid succession. And again, police are alleging that Jesse was the intended target and Luke was unfortunately killed after catching Beau off guard. So wrong place, wrong time. And Beau will later be seen again on camera returning to the same store to purchase a second surfboard bag, which the assumption is was used to conceal Jesse and Luke's bodies. And it made them easier to transport because now there's handles, there's things to grab. Police believe that after Beau put their bodies in these surfboard bags, he left home and rented a white Toyota Hiace van. So basically a white unmarked van at the Sydney airport. And then he returned to Jesse's home to basically move their bodies. And the next day, Beau signs his service weapon back into the Miranda police station and made partial admissions to an acquaintance about being involved in the deaths of two people, which I don't know. I don't know why he runs his mouth.
Yeah, I'm so confused.
I don't know either. But on this Tuesday, housemates of Jesse's also received texts stating that he had moved to Perth and to please go through any belongings that he might have left behind. basically put anything that they don't want in storage or just throw it out. So that's super suspicious.
So Bo stole his phone and was like texting that, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Well, what Wednesday, February 21st, remember, that's the day that the personal items were found in the skip bin. And missing persons investigation was launched. And police alleged that this is the day that Bo and a female friend who had been cleared of any involvement in the case, she's cooperating with the investigation. So we're not going to drag her through too much, but they went to a local hardware store and purchased an angle grinder and a padlock. And an angle grinder, it's a tool. It's basically a wheel that you can use to cut metal. Like I use it to cut off nails that are sticking out of a, like,
okay.
Just slices through metal and there's sparks that fly up. So you use it to cut, like, it's a perfect thing to cut through a padlock with.
Mm-hmm.
So the two went to the Bungonia area in New South Wales, Southern Tablelands, to a rural property that police believed Bo had previous connections to. And the two removed an existing padlock from a gate with that angle grinder that they just bought. And Bo then left his friend at the gate for about 30 minutes, drove off in this white van, allegedly left the bodies of Jesse and Luke, and then picked up the friend and replaced the cutoff padlock with a brand new one that they just bought. And then back to Sydney they went. So at 11 p.m., Bo is not done for the day, even though it's late. Bo has more work to do. So he went out to buy a set of weights and then returned to the Bungonia area. And police believe Bo might have become suspicious of his friend and returned to move the bodies, like figuring she was going to say something.
Oh, my God. That's like a lot. Like, why did he even take the friend with him in the first place?
Because he's an idiot or a show-off. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. But Bo seems to be running on a serious adrenaline high at this point. And police believe around 4:30 a.m. on Thursday, February 22nd, Bo left the Bungonia area to return to Sydney. And later that day, Bo stopped at another acquaintance's home in the Newcastle area, and he asked to borrow their garden hose, which he then proceeded to wash out the back of his white Hiace van without giving any additional details to this friend. So again, more red flags. On this day, the police also hold a press conference about Jesse and Luke's disappearance, and they plead with the public for any information. If anyone knows anything, reach out. They put a tip line number up. They put a hotline number. And later that evening, it's reported that police are searching. They're serving a search warrant in connection to the men's disappearance. And by 11 p.m., police raid the home of one of Bo's family members, and they seized several items of interest.
Oof.
Which is all we can say about it. We can't say what these items are. But it did appear that Bo stayed in the Newcastle area overnight because Friday, February 23rd, he allegedly leaves around 5 a.m., returning to Sydney about 6:15. And police locate this white Hiace van in Grays Point, which is a southern Sydney suburb. And then around 10:39 a.m., Bo turns himself into the Bondi police. And he's arrested and transferred to the Waverley Police Station and charged with the murders of Jesse Baird and Luke Davies. And Bo was denied bail, and he's been in jail ever since. And again, Bo was completely uncooperative with police, so the search for Jesse and Luke's bodies continued over the weekend, and it wasn't until Tuesday, February 27th, when Bo finally told police where they were. And with that, both men were located and identified by their families.
The bodies of Jesse Baird and Luke Davies have finally been found, a week after the couple disappeared from a Paddington home. Their remains were discovered in surfboard bags on a property at Bungonia near Goulburn. Detectives tipped off by the police officer who allegedly murdered them.
I feel like I have so many questions. Like, what is Bo's deal? Like, this all seems very chaotic, but it also seems like he had a plan.
Yeah, I feel like there was a plan. I absolutely do.
Right. And like, how did police know to be looking for him so fast? What are you leaving out? What is happening?
Not much gets by you. So I'm going to give you what I know about Bo Lamar Condon. But again, this is still going through the system. So like Bo, in spite of turning himself in, hasn't technically entered a guilty plea or a not guilty plea. And it's anyone close to him and Bo himself, they're not doing a lot of talking. So we're treading lightly, and we're also just kind of limited to what is out there right now.
This is all like the whole like keeping it quiet and not really knowing a lot of information. Like, this is very reminding me of that douchebag in Idaho.
Brian
Colbert, whatever his stupid ass dumb name is. Yeah,
I agree. I was thinking the same thing. And I don't know. It feels like such a stall tactic by guys who think they know enough about the system to get around it. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The loopholes. So here's what I know about Bo. And remember, back in the early 2000s, when celebs were hounded by the paparazzi and TMZ, and then these trashy magazine shows would come, or Perez Hilton. Remember that? Where they would splash pictures everywhere.
Oh, of course. I was in college then, and I'm ashamed to admit it now, but I was like all over that shit back in the day. But I'm surprised you remember that.
I absolutely do. I was cool in the early 2000s, believe it or not.
Moving on.
Also, it was everywhere, so it was pretty unavoidable to see this exposure. But yeah. It sounds like there was this subculture for Aussie teens that would kind of team up with the paparazzi and go out celeb chasing. Ooh. And the entire goal was to get as many selfies as you could. Like, this was a little different. They weren't going up to them trying to talk to them and get a quote or just ask them some bullshit question just to get a response. They were just trying to take selfies with them, or at least just brush shoulders with them. And that was it. That was the extent of it. So still annoying, but not like paparazzi level, I feel like.
Yeah.
And Bo was majorly into this subculture. And just for the record, it does appear that most of Bo's social media profiles and any websites or blogs that may have been that he would have run, they may have been scrubbed, because mm-hmm. he used to run a celeb gossip website that I think was called like What's the Tea or Spill the Tea or something like that, something along those lines. But when you go looking for it, there's pictures of Bo with like Selena Gomez, Taylor Swift, Kim Kardashian, Miley Cyrus, Lady Gaga. I mean, you name it. Who else was there? Harry Styles, Ryan Gosling, Katy Perry, Rihanna. I saw so many faces.
Wow.
Even with Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker, the guy from Blink-182.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in high school, Bo was voted most likely to be famous. So this was clearly an obsession that he had from a younger age with just this. It felt like being a celebrity was his whole personality.
He comes across as very douchey, and that is not allegedly. I'm just saying that.
He reminds me of David Pierce, the Hollywood producer.
Yes.
That's what I'm picturing. That's just the vibe I'm getting from him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the more recent photos out, but kind of before all this happened, was of this guy boarding a private jet and sitting all buckled in and on his phone, like waiting to take off. Like he's rocking the lifestyle.
Oh, God.
And you know what? So word on the street is you can rent a private jet for like an hour just to take photos in. Like you don't even have to let it leave. You don't need a pilot. You just don't even let it leave the hangar or the airport. You just go in there and take photos and that's it. You've rented a
plane. Okay, why haven't we done that? Like podcast team photo shoot with a private jet.
I'm kind of thinking it needs to happen.
You already got the Groupon, didn't you?
I do.
The whole clout chasing thing, I just don't get it. I feel like these people are like so unhappy and desperate with their own pathetic life, and they want this attention that they have to live like vicariously through these celebrities.
Is this your first day on social media? Like, that's, I know, literally, right? You literally what it's about. Yeah. Attention. Like, how awesome can I look to other people? Like, how happy can my family look? Oh, look at all the places I go. You know, that's what it is. And I'm guilty of it too. I mean, it's a culture that the younger generation is raised within this culture. Like we kind of adapted into it, but I don't know. It gets weirder because at some point Bo was given the advice that he needed to focus on, you know, a real job for a little bit if he was ever going to be taken seriously. So he had some family connections in law enforcement. So Bo decided to serve his community and become a police officer. And it looks like he was a police officer for about 5 years prior to February 2024, but he certainly does not have a completely clean jacket. So there was an incident with Bo where he actually shot a man in the face with a taser while the man was already on the ground. And Bo was technically cleared of any wrongdoing, but the incident did have locals asking questions about police officers in general, you know, the practices. And then,
yeah.
So as news about Jesse and Luke's disappearance and ultimate murders were coming out, it was reported that Bo and Jesse had been on and off again in a relationship. And while speaking with Corey Dean, it was made very clear to Sue that that was not the case. That was just something that he was saying. So Corey Dean actually also spoke to the media to try to clear this nasty rumor up. Mm-hmm. And because it turns out Bo and Jesse met at a nightclub and started a very casual friends with benefits type relationship. And he made it very clear with Bo, he was not looking for anything serious. Like they were seeing other people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, Jesse had found Bo going through his phone. Like, what stalker behavior? And Jesse confronted him and he was like, oh, I'm just turning off your alarm. And then, And then about 6 months prior to Jesse's death in August of 2023, Jesse called Corey Dean and told him that he had been followed home by a cop car. And after that point, the calls became more frantic and scarier. And in another call to Corey Dean, Jesse told him, "I was sleeping in my bed and I had the feeling someone was standing over me at the end of my bed." Also, what's going on with people standing at the end of beds?
Oh my God, I know. I hate that.
And to finish that quote, "And when I woke up, they stole my wallet and my phone, and I bolted after them in Paddington." So there was like weird shit going on. And the police have alleged in media conferences that Bo Lamar Condon was in fact the one who entered Jesse's home. And they believe he may have stolen a key or may have had a copy made. So some he was getting in somehow.
What a freaking creep. Like he just gets worse and worse.
That's a fact. So on November 16th, 2023, Jesse called Corey Dean again, saying that he was scared and his Instagram page was glitching all of a sudden. So now followers and there were just people were disappearing from his contacts and they were getting blocked. This one time, Jesse was having coffee with a friend and he got a text from Bo saying, "Hope you're enjoying that coffee with another guy."
So, oh my, what the actual fuck? Uh-huh. Like, this douche is stalking the shit out of Jesse. Like, I wonder when he like caught him on his phone, like I wonder if Bo had like hacked his phone or something and like logged in. Cause if it was like iPhones or whatever, and he was able to get access to like his cloud, he would have been able to see and access like everything that Jesse was doing.
Yeah. And you know, like they sync up with computers. So if like he did find that password or something, he probably could have changed on his computer. He would have never had to have his phone.
Oh,
creepy as hell. And like for Jesse, what does he do? Go to the cops? Like the guy is a cop, you know? So Jesse tried really hard to get away from Bo and hoped Bo would just move on, like get over it and move on. But after that, Bo started manipulating videos and photos and posting them on his own Instagram page, making it look like he and Jesse were a couple. And at that point, Jesse was like, donezo.
This guy needs a hobby.
Yeah, other than stalking dudes.
Well, yeah.
So with the help and support of Corey Dean, Jesse drafted a parting text, basically, to send Bo in November of 2023, which read, quote, "There have been many examples that have been brought to me since we met that show you've acted in a way that's completely inappropriate. I'm not going to stand for it anymore. I think it's best if we focus on ourselves and stop seeing each other. I have thought long and hard about this and know it's the right decision for me. I would appreciate if you could refrain from contacting me," end quote. And we don't have Bo's response, but Jesse told Corey Dean that I got a bloody whole written letter back from him. And it's crazy to me because this, I think what he wrote was fantastic because it was forceful. It didn't leave the door open at all. Like there was nothing about feelings for him, for Bo or anything like that. So like that message was very clear. Please leave me alone.
But it was also respectful. Like there was no name calling. There was no like dragging through the mud. Like
exactly.
But
it was a very powerful, perfect way to end things.
Yeah. But I'm like so befuddled here. Like, Jesse's being stalked by a freaking cop. Like,
I know.
I'm so glad he was lucky enough to have Corey Dean for support, but they weren't even living close to each other, from what I understand from Sue. Like, Corey Dean and Jesse didn't live near each other, so there isn't much that Corey Dean was able to physically do. But I don't know. I gotta say, this is happening in a same-sex domestic stalking situation. I'm sure that there's gotta be some level of thinking on Jesse's part that I can handle this, like along with the fear that he probably won't be taken seriously if he does go to the police to report anything.
Oh, 100%. And there's a history of distrust between the queer community and police departments as well. So you have to remember that you now have a member of the queer community that's also a member of the police community stalking and increasing scary behavior towards someone that has close ties to like news channels and journalists. So it's a very fuzzy gray area that everybody's treading real lightly. And so I can absolutely see where Jesse would have fear of retaliation from Bo if he tried to get additional help and protection, you know?
Yeah.
And Jesse just wanted to move on with his life and Bo was clearly fixated.
I feel like Bo was thinking of Jesse as like, oh, this guy's my ticket to celebrity, like to the celebrity world. Bo is quite clearly a user and a loser.
I can completely agree with that. I think that was the motive. And I think it was just, he would make Jesse love him and be in a real relationship with him. And it would be his own personal stepping stone to this celebrity lifestyle that he craved. We aren't the only ones who this case rocked, though. So while researching, we came across a beautiful song called No More. And Sue reached out to the musician Greg Gold And we want to thank him so much for taking time to chat with Sue, because he said when the news broke, he felt paralyzed. And while Greg didn't know Jesse personally, they did have a lot of friends in common. So Greg and Adam Noviello co-wrote the song and collaborated with Kate DeRouge and Queen Kong. And they performed the song. And Kate is an Australian Idol winner, while Queen Kong is a kind of a motherly figure in the queer community and also a runner-up on Drag Race.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So this group of powerful voices came together to be united for their community and help shed light on this awful display of violence.
Yeah.
And we'll post a link for these songs on Spotify. But please, guys, if you could give them a listen, that would be amazing, because these artists are donating all proceeds from streaming and the purchase of the song to the No More organization, which is a global organization trying to fight and end domestic violence. So that, unfortunately, is all the information that we have right now. So it kind of wraps up our story, unfortunately. And as of this recording, May 13th, 2025, we're just waiting for the next updates from the Australian courts. But we do know that Bo underwent a mental health evaluation, which those results are actually going to be released on the 20th of this month. So it's going to set the stage for what happens next in these proceedings. And we look forward to bringing you an update, because if it does, in fact, happen on the 20th, we will definitely put together something. Maybe we'll even have Sue do it, because she was really invested in this case. Put together a little update on this so you guys can keep tabs on it.
Wait, before we end, though, we need to talk about Bo, because this is so premeditated. Like,
I agree.
If it comes back that he wasn't mentally fit at the time, why was he a police officer? Riddle me that.
Well, and he buying all of these things, like being caught buying stuff, checking out his Glock, bringing a friend along to the buying a surfboard bag and then a second surfboard bag. There was a plan here. And then obviously going into their social medias and posting and making calls from their phone and texting people from his phone. So there were a lot of steps here that I'm not sure if you're mentally ill that you would be capable of pulling off.
Well, and even before that, we kind of have like a pattern of this inappropriate behavior with him being like, oh, I hope you're having fun having coffee with another guy. Like,
yeah,
that to me is a pattern of this, again, inappropriate behavior that kind of shows a lead up to what happened. So by doing this whole mental health evaluation, I mean, it's going to come out badly either way. Either you are mentally unfit and you shouldn't have been a police officer, so the Australian authorities are going to have to answer to that. Mm-hmm. Or you are not you are mentally well and you committed murder, allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. I've never been so invested in a mental health evaluation before until we covered this story. It's like, man, I'm really curious to see where this goes, because you want to see this go the way that everyone hopes it's going to go.
Right. And I also think that this could potentially be a big stepping stone towards possibly mending, but maybe not, the kind of strained relationship between the queer community and the Australian authorities that, like, you briefly discussed earlier.
It's just them proving that they're willing to go after somebody, even if he's a police officer, in the pursuit of justice. So I agree it would go a really long way for public image.
Wow, this was wild. Even though we don't have all the information, I'm really glad we covered it. And on behalf of Ed, me, Candace, Sue, our whole team, we want to give a very special thank you to Corey Dean and Greg Gold. Like,
seriously, thank you guys.
We truly appreciate your openness and taking the time to chat with us. And to the Baird and Davies families, we are sending immense hugs and support from the USA.
Absolutely.
And listeners, as Ed said, we are going to be bringing updates as more information comes out.
Totally. And please don't forget, take 3 minutes out of your day to listen to Know More and add it to your playlist, because every click, every play, every download, it all makes a difference.
Oh my gosh, absolutely do that. But that is really all we have for this episode of Murder Unscripted. Again, this was a little bit of a shorter episode because the case is kind of ongoing, but we really wanted to give you a backstory on what was happening and just to hear about Jesse and Luke, because as we said earlier, that's one of my favorite parts of these cases, like to find out about the victim and what they were passionate about. And it's very clear that these two young men were so full of life and love and just passion for, like, just everything. It wasn't even anything in particular. Like, it just looks like there was so much that they were excited about.
although justice has not been served yet, we are rooting for justice to be served. And I feel like this case is important to tell because it's on the tip, I think, of something big. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that all of this goes as everyone hopes it's going to, and then that finally some closure.
Yeah, the families deserve at least that for sure. So definitely keep an eye out for updates on Jesse and Luke's case. We will, of course, post anything that we find. You know, we'll post it to the podcast platforms. We'll do it to our YouTube and, of course, our social media. We are on Facebook, Insta, and TikTok at Murder Unscripted. You can hit us up on our website, www.murderunscriptedpod.com. Or, you know, if you're interested and you feel like you might have missed something, you can shoot us an email to murderunscriptedpod@gmail.com.
You can. And definitely tune in next Tuesday for our amazing interview with our new friends. People are the worst.
I definitely told them they have to be our friends.
That's not how friendship works.
Be my friend. It worked with you. So
it didn't work with Edna Martin, so.
Damn it.
Well, they are awesome people, and you guys are going to really enjoy their interview because it's a little more lighthearted. There are some serious moments, but it's just kind of it was just a nice conversation. We play it cool. We brought a palate cleanser back for the end of this,
yes, block. It was so, a fun palate cleanser, so get excited for that.
Totally.
But until then, stay safe, be kind, don't be the worst, and be the best, yeah. And remember, perverts don't wear signs that say they're perverts.
They do chase celebrities, though.
I was going to say, they allegedly may wear Australian police officer uniforms. Bye.
How could you hurt the one you say you love the most? What made you think you had that power? Who told you you got in for a day? He wasn't yours to take forever. No more cruelty, no more hate, no more lying, we won't wait. No more pretending, no more fears, no more broken mother's tears. No more danger, no more lies, no more pain in each other's eyes. No more guns, no more war, no more. And I say, why is there so much violence, too much silence? Cry for the souls we've lost. How many more have to die?
We must come together, love's the answer.
My